Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. Welcome to the program. We have a lot to celebrate today. They got rid of a fellow traveler on, and I don't mean traveling with me, a fellow traveler on NPR, but that's just the beginning. I mean, it's window dressing. When you dump the head of NPR, what are you really doing? You're changing the mannequins in the window. National Propaganda Radio has been a thorn in my side ever since I've had to work for a living on radio, because I know what these bums make. I know what these talentless fools on NPR make. And frankly, if they went into the commercial marketplace, they couldn't get a job. Nevertheless, because of the work of the young man we had on the show yesterday, they dumped her because it's bad for PR. Right now, there's a different Congress, and they're afraid of losing some funding, so they threw her out. But we've looked at her before, by the way. NPR CEO Vivian Schiller, we're talking about. She resigned in the wake of James O'Keefe and his amazing investigative journalism, as we discussed here yesterday in the Savage Nation. And so thanks to O'Keefe and those of you who have supported him by going to his website, NPR has gone from the triumph of the will to the downfall of the shill. Now, today I'm going to play for you some of the complete insanity that National Propaganda Radio has been responsible for recently and that you as an American citizen have been paying for. And we're going to do this little by little, and we're going to ask you some questions. They claim that those caught on tape are an anomaly, that this is not really the attitude of the wonderful journalists. Journalists. When I hear the word journalists, I reach for my Glock because I know they're about to indict me for something I didn't do. The fact of the matter is there are no journalists except on the internet and in talk radio. There are a few others here and there, but they're very, very rare and very hard to find. Most of them are just propagandists for the radical left. And I'm going to prove it to you now. They claim that they're impartial. I'm going to ask you, what stories has National Propaganda Radio not covered that you think are extremely important? I'll start with a few of them. And when I say not covered, I mean covered. I don't mean just passing, you know, we mentioned it. All right, so you can call me at 1-800-449-8255, Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255, to tell me what stories NPR has not covered over the years you've been listening to them that you think were critically important to America. Here are some on my list. The Acorn scandal, the flood of illegal aliens crossing the border, the death panels that were in Obamacare that I told you about, the Soros connection to the rising up in the Middle East, the radical Muslim murder of U.S. troops in Germany just last week, Nancy Pelosi abusing the U.S. Air Force and using it as a personal taxi service for herself and her family for well over 2 years. The trail of leftist cowardice in the U.S. military that led to the Fort Hood shootings by Muslim Major Nidal Hassan. Louis Farrakhan attacking the Jews regularly. And Obama's constant partying at the White House as though Obama's a teenage child and his parents are away for a vacation. And last but not least, here's another story that they've never covered. There's only one member of the American media banned from entering the United Kingdom. Doesn't matter whether they like my politics. It's a major story. They never covered it. So you've got an opportunity now to call the show. I've given you the number, 1-800-449-8255. But while you're doing it, I'm going to play for you some selected tapes that my wonderful staff has garnered from the years from NPR. And you're not going to believe what you're about to hear. The first one is an NPR analyst named Daisy Hernandez, who expresses her, quote, brown relief, unquote, brown relief, that the Arizona shooter, Loeffner, was not Latino, but instead was a gringo. Now, this is an example of NPR, the same group that pats themselves on the back for their objectivity. They're a bunch of left-wing biased fanatics, and they should be defunded. Here again is NPR analyst Daisy Hernandez. Listen carefully.
I wasn't the only person on Saturday who rushed to her Android when news came of the Tucson shooting. I wasn't looking, however, to read about what had happened. What I wanted to know was the killer's surname. My eye scanned the mobile papers. I held my breath. Finally, I saw it. Jared Loughner. Not a Ramirez, Gonzalez, or Garcia. It's safe to say there was a collective sigh of brown relief when the Tucson killer turned out to be a gringo.
Gringo. I don't even like the way you say it, honey. You should be dismissed and go back to the hole you crawled out of. There's an NPR analyst expressing her, quote, brown relief, unquote, that the Arizona shooter wasn't Latino, but instead a gringo. I rest my case. There are many others, and they're coming up in a minute. Now, if you think I'm being overly harsh on the left, you have no idea how harsh I really am off the air, what I actually think is going on in this country, what needs to be done. But since this is a public a commercial radio show, I'll leave it at that. Now, to show you how fair-minded I am, Newt Gingrich, who I call the go-pack tick in a book I wrote 5 years ago called The Political Zoo, Newt Gingrich, to me, makes my flesh crawl. He actually sickens me whenever I see him. He is everything wrong with the Republican Party. But wait, it got worse today. Newt Gingrich said this. He said he's a contender for the 2012 Republican nomination, and then he spoke about his extramarital affairs. And listen to what he said. He said, my love of America made me love a lot of other things. So in other words, he's using patriotism to say that inspired his adultery. Now, the fact of the matter is, if Newt Gingrich were to write his new autobiography, you ought to call it The Audacity of Grope by Newt Gingrich. Patriotism inspired adultery, indeed, Newt. You ought to just hide your head in shame and do what you do best, which is simply be a go-pack tick. Get off the stage, Newt. You're disgusting. It's horrible. Anyway, I didn't know that adultery was one of those things you could do for your country, Newt, by the way. And Gingrich also says he was unfaithful and abandoned both of his dying wives because of his passion for America. Only Rush Limbaugh could believe that. We won't even mention Wahlbanger. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Again, which stories has NPR not covered that you think are important? I've given you my list. Now, before we go on, I'm going to have another doozy for you, not from Daisy Hernandez. But did you miss the Daisy Hernandez thing? Because nobody in the media has covered this but me. Nobody has gotten it but me. I'm going to play it again now. Here is an NPR analyst. Again, these are the wonderful, objective liberals who boast about how objective they are. Here is an NPR analyst, Daisy Hernandez, expressing her, quote, brown relief that the Arizona shooter wasn't Latino, but instead thankful that he was a gringo. Listen.
I wasn't the only person on Saturday who rushed to her Android when news came of the Tucson shooting. I wasn't looking, however, to read about what had happened. What I wanted to know was the killer's surname. My eye scanned the mobile papers. I held my breath. Finally, I saw it. Jared Loughner. Not a Ramirez, Gonzalez, or Garcia. It's safe to say there was a collective sigh of brown relief when the Tucson killer turned out to be a gringo.
Now, she wasn't fired, of course. Gringo. 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 You work for NPR? Unbelievable to me what we pay for. What suckers we ought to give them 10 cents. But then again, on the other side, look what you have. Newt Gingrich, life, liberty, and the pursuit of horniness. And I would say only a man who truly loves America would sleep with other women to save it. Gingrich, 2012. Newt's campaign slogan could also be Gingrich, sowing the seeds of liberty one woman at a time. Yeah, you get the picture, okay? That's why I'm an independent and loved so much by the Republican Party. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Person on Saturday who rushed to her Android when news came of the Tucson shooting. I wasn't looking, however, to read about what had happened. What I wanted to know was the killer's surname. My eye scanned the mobile papers. I held my breath. Finally, I saw it. Jared Loughner. Not a Ramirez, Gonzalez, or Garcia. It's safe to say there was a collective sigh of brown relief when the Tucson killer turned out to be a gringo.
Guess that NPR analyst Daisy Hernandez expresses her brown relief that Arizona shooter wasn't Latino, but instead a gringo. That passes for journalism at National Propaganda Radio. But we're discussing bigger things than that, and we're glad to see that she's gone. And that whatever her name was, Schiller. We looked up Schiller's background, and it's quite interesting what Schiller did, by the way. We looked up her background. Vivian Schiller. Well, let's look at her background. Vivian Schiller, let's see. What? She had a book party for someone who did a book by something with the name Nation? Wow. Wow. No, that's not the one I want. No, give me the one where it shows her. She studied Russian, right? At Cornell. Soviet studies. Vivian Louisa Schiller, born September 13, 1961, is the former president and CEO of National Propaganda Radio. Schiller is the daughter of Ron Schiller, a former editor at Reader's Digest. Now, I can tell you, I can spend an hour on Reader's Digest. And Lillian Schiller of Larchmont, New York. She graduated from Cornell University with a bachelor's in Russian studies and Soviet studies and a master's in Russian from Middlebury College. Prior to leading NPR, Schiller was a senior vice president of NewYorkTimes.com, a well-known Stalinist front group forever. She was the first general manager of Discovery Times Channel from 02 to 06. I happen to like Discovery Times, by the way, but the New York Times and the Russian is enough for me. And getting rid of her is only the first step. The fact of the matter is we need to defund them because they don't need our money anyway. They've said it. They boasted about it. They don't want us. And I would say that anyone who thinks we should fund NPR doesn't really know what they're doing. And I will go again. There he goes again. There I go. What stories has NPR not covered is the issue. Acorn, illegal aliens, death panels, Soros connection, the radical Muslim murder of U.S. troops in Germany, the Fort Hood shootings, and its relationship to the cowardice in the military about saying anything about a Muslim, Louis Farrakhan ripping apart Jews and Israel, Obama's constant partying at the White House like a teenager. Those are just some of the things. What else have they not covered on NPR, which shows you they're nothing but a propaganda organization? Houston, Eric, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
NPR did not cover the banning of free speech by Great Britain. Talking about you, Dr. Savage.
No, of course not. I don't exist to NPR because that's the way it works in the ex-Soviet Union. They don't necessarily imprison someone. They don't murder someone. They make them disappear by not covering them. They put you in the gulag of the media. But in that regard, they're no different than Fox News. I mean, to be fair to the discussion. You know, I mean, Fox does a very good job on certain things, but in other ways, they're really not that fair and balanced either. Nobody is.
It's true. It's just like my local talk show syndicates. They don't want to talk about it either. They say, Michael Savage is someone with the radio show, and I don't listen to it, pretty much.
Right. They don't want to hear what I have to say. How about The Audacity of Grope by Newt Gingrich? You think Newt would be a good president?
No way. Nothing compared to
him. Why? He's saying that his adultery was inspired by his love for America. That's pretty amazing. I mean, if this is not the end of Newt Gingrich's career, I don't know what it's going to take for people to wake up to the fact that he's a lobbyist, period. Okay, what else did NPR not cover? Before we do that, let's go to the next soundbite from NPR. We're exposing NPR today in our own little way. Here's NPR's Nina Totenberg, where she says something about a Christmas party in the most derogatory fashion.
But I want to say one thing about the budget that didn't get passed, the omnibus bill. You know, we talk a lot about, we just passed this huge tax cut in part because business said, you know, we have to plan, we have to know what kind of tax cuts we have. Well, these agencies, including the Defense Department, don't know how much money they've got and for what. And I was at a Christmas party at the Department of Justice, and people were actually really worried about this. These are law enforcement people.
All right, let's stop right there. So there's Nina Totenberg saying, I was at a Christmas party at the Department of Justice. Do I have to say anything more about her? Nina Totenberg still appears, by the way, and I think, isn't she on Fox News regularly? I see her, I think, on Fox, isn't she? I think so. I think she's one of their regular announcers. So what else have they not covered that you think shows their bias? There's a lot of other sound bites we're going to play on the Savage Nation showing you National Propaganda Radio's biases. I think this is a good one. Let's go to clip five. Don't play it yet. I want to show you the kind of things they do cover on NPR. Here's an author saying that the most important story of the day is to save the country's disappearing Jewish delis. Listen to clip five.
Anytime someone orders a pastrami sandwich on white bread, somewhere a Jew dies. So maybe it wasn't the cholesterol that was killing everyone. It was other people ordering pastrami on white with mayo. There are certain rules that you should follow in a delicatessen. And
all right, let's stop right here. This is the kind of adolescent idiocy that they cover on NPR. Next, go to six. Listen to this.
Legend has it, because this happened 2 years before I was born, that my grandfather had been treated for angina. And he was supposedly released from the hospital with a stern warning from the doctor saying, you know, you really have to live better. You can't smoke. You can't eat these fatty foods. And so to celebrate his release, he went to Schwartz's Delicatessen in Montreal, a famous delicatessen, and he got a sandwich piled high, a smoked meat sandwich piled high with speck, which they no longer make, which was the fat cut from the top of the brisket, the pickled fat, dusted in paprika, and
all right,
then
let's spare us the details, Boychuk. We know about your grandfather's coronary. Why don't you just show his varicose veins next on the NPR website? And say, my grandfather's varicose veins, make that a major expose. It's unbelievable to me. Remember when I exposed the Dubai port steal, how Bush attacked me and how he hired his dumb nephew, his half-Latino nephew, to attack us, those of us who opposed the Dubai port steal as bigots? You remember those days? Don't assume that this is all one-sided. It really isn't. Now you say, well, all right, why are you not on the side of the Republicans? Answer, because you can figure it out for yourself. I'm sitting here in a radio studio. I'm one man. I have an opinion on everything. That's why I'm hired. I'm here to give you one man's opinion and back it up with facts. Now, the NPR chief who was fired says, I dare you to point to specific stories where NPR has shown bias. I've shown you two. Nina Totenberg saying she was at a, please forgive me expression, Christmas party. And NPR analyst Daisy Hernandez saying she had brown relief that the Arizona shooter wasn't Latino, but instead a gringo. Gringo. That's like saying, what's the word for howley in Hawaii? Another offensive anti-white phrase, howley.
Savage.
For those that do criticize us for being liberal, you know, I ask them when I get that personally, I ask them to point to specific stories, and when they do, we take those very seriously. Have we erred? Absolutely. We have erred in the past, but we make corrections, and we always strive to do better.
You're a lying nobody. That's why you were fired. You were finally found out. Your skirts are dirty. They got rid of you, but you're only the beginning. I mean, let's face it. The entire organization is systemically left-wing. It's a systemically insane left-wing organization. Nothing has come out of NPR that I know of that's of any value. Nothing. They've done no investigative reporting on the stories that we've mentioned on this show. The Acorn scandal, the illegal alien destruction of our schools and healthcare system, the death panels in Obamacare, Soros's connection to the demise of the Middle East, the radical Muslim murders in the United States of America, including the one last week in Germany of unarmed U.S. troops. Nancy Pelosi abusing the U.S. Air Force as a personal taxi service for over 2 years. The trail of leftist cowardice in the U.S. Army and the entire government that led to the Fort Hood massacre by Major Nidal Hassan. Louis Farrakhan's vile anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish speech of 2 weeks ago. And Obama's adolescent partying at the White House. So, you know, old whatever her name is, she's gone, but she's only the beginning and she's not the real problem. The problem is a government funding of a media outlet. Once you have that, you have inherently created a biased, corrupt system that's going to always make sure that the boss is happy, the boss being the White House, the boss being the special interest that put these wonderful, superb people in Congress. And so they're nothing more, really, than a propaganda arm of the government and of the left-wing mentality, very much like Pravda or Izvestia was in the ex-Soviet Union, and they should be disfunded completely. And so should the UN, by the way. I'm going to launch into a UN diatribe one of these days. Here we have Gaddafi using airplanes and tanks, killing his civilians, which Louis Farrakhan said is a lie of the big media, by the way, in order to bamboozle the idiots who listen to him in Chicago. The same Louis Farrakhan said, we don't know that he's really doing it. My brother Gaddafi. Well, we do have proof, Mr. Farrakhan. And anyone with a brain can see it if they just turn their televisions on, because even that imagery is getting out. But the fact of the matter is the UN is doing nothing. Once again, it's a useless group of individuals who simply use it as a cash cow, an ATM for themselves and their family. I say get rid of the UN, get the UN out of America, etc. But that's a whole other story. What else won't NPR cover is the real story. And that's why I've asked you to call the show. Elaine in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I have two stories that I would love to have seen them cover. One, to evaluate the movie that Michael Moore did, stating the Cuban healthcare system was far superior and better than ours. And the
Can second, you imagine that a fat slob like that would have the audacity to put out a lying film like that that distributors would cover and morons would go to? Do they have any idea what the Cuban medical system is? It's not a medical system. It's a bunch of broken-down fourth-rate clinics with ill-trained doctors with no medication.
Correct. I have someone that I worked with that left Cuba, and she had an uncle that needed surgery. And when he waited 2 years to have the surgery...
Well, let's not even go into it. It's so good that Castro flew in a surgeon from Spain or went to Spain. I think he flew one in from Spain, as they all do, or from Miami. You know, Dr. Goldberg wanted in the main corridor. They don't use their own doctors. They have a special hospital for the elites. Did you know that?
Yes.
The hospital that fat pig was showing was a hospital reserved for the elites and the government. Did you know that?
Yes, because my friend's family still lives in Cuba, so she told us there are stores that the visitors can go to that the people who live in Cuba cannot shop.
That lying, fat, slimy propagandist. He should be driven out of the country on the edge of a... Anyway, go on. What else?
So
they don't cover any of that. Well, the country's riddled with communists and left-wingers of every stripe. They're like rotten skunks, poisoning America's body politic everywhere I turn. I feel like puking every time I hear them open their stinking, dirty mouths. I'm not going to put up with this anymore. You know, some days I'm very quiet and some days I'm volatile. I am for mind putting in 100 stinking Republicans who do nothing. We don't need John Boehner with the pink tie to just save the country. We need visceral, muscular right-wingers are going to stand up to these left-wing drug addicts and say, shut your pie hole. Go back to China. We're sick of you. That's what we need. We need it every day. We need vocal, loud, courageous men and women in Congress. I cannot stand this polite talk anymore. It's killing all of us. You know, someone once told me when I was 18 years old, there's a huge chasm between politeness and sincerity. I thought that was very well put. I didn't quite understand it when I was 18. I surely understand it now. All you got to do is watch that videotape of these two at NPR just before they got fired, of that overly polite fundraiser sitting with that ultra erect posture of the academician at lunch. Nodding, everything, eating up everything that the fake Muslim Brotherhood guys were saying to him. Taking a little nibble now and again from the free lunch. You know, I know what these people are like. They make my flesh crawl. I'd rather see a guy eating a hero sandwich in an undershirt. I'll get more truth out of him, I can guarantee you. Anyway, what else won't NPR cover? You're the people. You're the Savage Nation. You're the ones who know what they are. You're the ones who have stories that they won't. They never covered the Dubai port steal, did they? Never. Never. Minnesota, Kevin, what else doesn't NPR cover?
Dr. Savage, it's an honor. The other day I was listening to, I believe it was a CBS feed, and it's a story about how the Department of Justice, in their attempt to find all these disgusting gun dealers that are smuggling the weapons down into Mexico, causing all the problems.
Mm-hmm.
One of the guns ended up killing one of the agents.
Right.
And that's been silent. And the other story was...
Wait, hold on. It turns out it wasn't gun dealers who sent the weapons to Mexico. It was the U.S. government. It was Obama's ATF that sent the weapons to Mexico.
That's terrifying.
Not U.S. gun dealers. It was the government itself that did it. Napolitano should be in prison for this.
I agree 100%.
She is not only incompetent now, she's culpable. How do they let her get away with this? I saw the hearing yesterday when they asked her about the guns that the ATF sent to Mexico that wound up in the hands of gangs. She had the nerve to sit there, and she says, well, this is being investigated as we speak. That's not good enough. But the Republicans, obviously, are just check pants, Rockefeller-like Republicans. So we didn't get the change we wanted. No. Thanks for the call. No, it's one after the other. There's so many other stories that they don't cover. So many other stories. Jim in New York on OR, go ahead. Tell us what else they don't cover.
Hi, Michael. We spoke a few weeks ago about the CMKM diamonds and the largest security in world history. And you can Google up CMKM diamonds and see it all over the Internet, but you cannot get anyone to discuss this because the Securities and Exchange Commission aided and abetted the whole thing, and it's a cover-up for all of the politicians who have actually raped and gutted the U.S. Treasury and to the tune of $42 trillion. And you cannot get a story on this anywhere. It's unbelievable. But if you go on the web, you can find it simply by Googling up the CMKM diamond story.
Unbelievable. I remember we talked about it, but I don't want to distract everybody with yet a story they don't know about, meaning a story they don't know about. Now, Schiller says, again, play clip 9 so we can set this up properly.
For those that do criticize us for being liberal, you know, I ask them when I get that personally, I ask them to point to specific stories. And when they do, we take those very seriously. Have we erred?
Yeah.
Absolutely. We have
sure.
erred in the past. But we make corrections, and we always strive to do better.
We take them very seriously. We made errors in the past. We can do better. This is before she got dumped today. It reminded me of that incredible scene in 2000. I forget the name of the movie already because I just saw it again the other night. What was it called, Beowulf? 2001. Was that the name of it? A Space Odyssey. It was astounding. What was it done in 1970? 72? Something like that. Anyway, the scene where the computer is finally found out to be faulty and subverting the mission. And the main character goes into the brain and he starts taking the brain apart. Dave, listen to this.
I honestly think you ought to sit down calmly, take a stress pill, and think things over.
Daisy.
Daisy. So Dave, the commander of the mission, who finally finds out that the brain has been sabotaging the mission and goes into the control room and starts unscrewing the brain. It's like we're unscrewing NPR right now, which is the brain of the Soviets inside the U.S. government. And they're fighting back. Yeah, soon they'll be singing Daisy, Daisy. And, of course, that's why we played Daisy a little earlier. Daisy Hernandez. Listen to Daisy Hernandez again in clip 1.
I wasn't the only person on Saturday who rushed to her Android when news came of the Tucson shooting. I wasn't looking, however, to read about what had happened. What I wanted to know was the killer's surname. My eye scanned the mobile papers. I held my breath. Finally, I saw it. Jared Loughner. Not a Ramirez, Gonzalez, or Garcia. It's safe to say there was a collective sigh of brown relief when the Tucson killer turned out to be a gringo.
Notice there was no compassion for those that he killed, no interest in the story itself, only that her own people weren't involved in the murder. It's astounding to me, but she's an NPR analyst. Now, if this was the only case of a biased individual in the media, it would be one thing, but it isn't. There's lots of bias in the media, primarily on the left, because there's almost no right-wing media at all. You got talk radio. You got a modicum of conservatism on Fox News, and I say a modicum because they've changed rapidly from what was once a very, very right-wing outlet to something that is more like what CNN was about 5 years ago. Once the accord was worked out between Roger Ailes and the White House, and of course the leprechaun was granted access to the imposter, everything changed after that. Once the leprechaun was granted access to the imposter, Fox News ceased to interest me in any way. It doesn't mean there aren't some good stories. I watch CNN. I even watch the freaks on MSNBC because once in a while a scintilla of something interesting will peek out from behind the moon there that's causing a little blackout of the sun. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Okay, so Harry Reid calls for Bill H.R. 1. He calls it mean-spirited because it eliminates NPR and the Cowboy Poetry Festival. We may as well listen to it for comic relief. Let's hear 13.
The mean-spirited bill, H.R. 1, eliminates national public broadcasting. Now, that is really saying a lot, isn't it, Madam President?
Yeah, it sure
eliminates
is.
National Endowment of Humanities, National Endowment of the Arts. These programs create jobs. The National Endowment of Humanities.
For left-wing goons who can't get a job in the universities, who are paid about 25 times more than they're worth. Now, clip 14 gets even more hilarious.
The National Endowment of Humanities is the reason we have in Northern Nevada every January the Cowboy Poetry Festival. Had that program not been around, the tens of thousands of people who come there every year would not exist.
I'll just switch it over to the Bunny Ranch Poetry Festival, Harry. Then you could charge. You wouldn't have to get government funding. I mean, go into the private sector. You have a product in Nevada that everyone likes. Why not use it? Well, poetry's not one of them. I mean, there is a product in Nevada that people go there for, and it isn't poetry. Why should we fund the poetry from cowboys? I never heard of such a thing. Anyway, the point is this. Vivian Schiller, the NPR CEO, Soviet expert, resigned today, which is as a result of the video, the hidden video. And that's a good thing. But it's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, there's hundreds of millions of dollars at stake. And the government just came out, Obama came out today through his spokesmouth, Carney, who I call, Carney is a perfect name. The White House press spokesman, Jay Carney, just add hyphen Barker, Jay Carney Barker, said that NPR and public broadcasting are important priorities for federal funding. Of course, because they push forward the agenda of the government, mainly your government. And he said the president put forward a really, really lean budget. So his new budget includes $451 million for the CPR. That's the Corporation for Propaganda Broadcasting. Slightly below the $460 million that Obama proposed in fiscal 2011. You hear? He's going to cut $9 million out of it. And these bums are still going to get almost $500 million to play with in order to insult, let us see, families, God, America, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, the church. Let us see. Should we go down the hit list of people that they hate? And what do they support? What are they always bending over back? Well, do I have to live? You know what it's all about. Now, I'm asking you to help me with this, which is, again, let's have some other a list of the other topics that they have not covered. But before we do, let's have another look at what's going on today inside the new White House. Here's the remarks from March 8, 2011, of First Lady Michelle Obama at the International Women's Day reception in the East Room of the White House. Listen to this one.
Oh, my goodness. Good evening. I love you all. This is an exciting day. Exciting. We had a fabulous morning at the State Department, and I hope you all are having just a lot of fun here this evening.
Fun. Having a lot of fun here. That's what they have at the White House, lots of fun. He's going to have another party, I think, tonight or tomorrow with basketball teams. That's after his golf game. The man set the Middle East on fire, and now he's having another party. And, of course, pandering to every radical leftist agenda point known to the left wing in the country. When people say to me, what do you really think about Obama? I say, well, you didn't read Trickle Up Poverty? I'll tell you what I really think. Let me make it simpler for you. In the 60s, we had black radicals in America who were threatening this country in every way imaginable. Most of them grew up, went on with their lives, and basically, whether they still love America or not is their business. But they're not into the bombings. They're not into the hateful, vitriolic attacks on America. They've come to understand that they were just manipulated by the Soviets in their midst. And basically, you know, they did what they could to get ahead in this country, and some of them did very well indeed. Obama, as I told you, although he was raised in a privileged background by a very hardworking white grandmother who sacrificed that he could go to Punahou High School and then to Columbia, whose records have still been sealed, by the way, he made a decision. He said when he got to Columbia, he said he was never radicalized as a youth. He said, though, he realized he was of mixed heritage and he had to make a decision, and he decided at Columbia to side with the black radicals at Columbia at that time, because they were where the action was at. Now, that's understandable when you're in college. Many people go to the far left in college, but most people outgrow it. Obama has taken on the entire 60s radical worldview in whole cloth, wrapped himself in whole cloth as though he's a black revolutionary of the 60s, like a Stokely Carmichael circa 1969, and he has not grown up. Now, he's very smooth at what he does, but if you actually study the policies he's imposing, the policies that he has imposed, and what he yet wants to do to this country to, quote, transform it, you'll see that what I'm saying is not really a stretch of the imagination. We have a serious problem. We have a 60s radical inside the White House. Michelle Obama is a 60s radical inside the White House. And we, the American people, are suffering as a result of it. That's my analysis. Does that make me an evil man for giving you my analysis? Do I say these things to you to alarm you, to shock you? Well, I want to shock you into the danger we're in. If I said to you just destroying NASA alone was an impeachable offense, I would be right. If I said to you, I can go down the list, but no one ever talks about it. The man destroyed the greatest space program in the history of the world. Now he's going to make us second and third to Russia and China. If that's not a subversive act, tell me what is a subversive act. Now, of course, that wouldn't be covered by NPR. They're busy covering Jewish corned beef sandwiches in Montreal how they affect one of the Yenta's grandfathers. There are many other stories that they have not and will not cover. And if you want to call us, you can. There's another big story today, which I'm going to shift to in the next hour, the death penalty. The so-called governor of Illinois abolished capital punishment and emptied death row today. Emptied death row. Commuted the sentences of 15 murderers on Illinois' death row. Questions from you. Are you for or against the death penalty and why? Did you hear me? Let's have that discussion again. Illinois' governor abolished capital punishment and emptied death row, commuting all of their sentences. Have a nice left-wing day.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Those that do criticize us for being liberal, you know, I ask them when I get that personally, I ask them to point to specific stories. And when they do, we take those very seriously. Have we erred? Absolutely. We have erred in the past. But we make corrections, and we always strive to do better.
I wasn't the only person on Saturday who rushed to her Android when news came of the Tucson shooting. I wasn't looking, however, to read about what had happened. What I wanted to know was the killer's surname. My eyes scanned the mobile papers. I held my breath. Finally, I saw it. Jared Loughner. Not a Ramirez, Gonzalez, or Garcia. It's safe to say there was a collective sigh of brown relief when the Tucson killer turned out to be a gringo.
I honestly think you ought to sit down calmly, take a stress pill, and think things over.
Daisy.
Yes, Daisy, I really ought to think you take a stress pill and express your relief with a stress pill. We are focusing on the demise of the so-called CEO of so-called National Propaganda Radio, which is only the beginning. We should get rid of this funding completely. If a corporation wants to risk damaging their reputation by funding this left-wing front group, go ahead. Go ahead. Let's see what the Tea Party does next. Maybe you'll wind up without anyone buying your products, because I'll tell you something. It's not just the $500 million that they suck out of the national treasury, which they spit at and say we don't even need, okay? It's the fact that they say this is seed money for the 90% that they get from communists in America and around the world. Incidentally, that's an interesting point right there. How much of their money comes from nefarious third world sources to push forward, let us say, the Wahhabi view of Islam? We don't know how much Saudi money is invested into NPR through front groups, do we? And we don't know how much of it comes from China through front groups to go soft on China's buildup in their military, et cetera, and so on. I can't cover it all in one breath, you know what I'm saying? But I gave you a list of stories NPR has not covered that I think are important. And when I say covered, I mean covered, not just mentioned. Michael Savage being banned in Britain, big story. Only member of the American media not allowed in England. Why won't they cover it? Why? Because they're a left-wing front group. The Acorn scandal. What illegal aliens are doing to our schools and hospitals. The death panels that we told you are in Obamacare. Soros' connection to the Middle East mess. The radical Muslim murder of U.S. troops in Germany just last week. Nancy Pelosi abusing the U.S. Air Force and using it as a personal taxi service for herself and her family. Big scandal, by the way. The leftist cowardice in the U.S. Army that led to the Fort Hood shootings or massacre. This is the second largest act of terrorism on American soil since 9/11, committed by a Muslim, and all a result of political fears. Obama's constant partying at the White House. That's another major story. It's a scandal. And so Vivian Schiller is either... Well, I don't have to categorize what she is. We know what she is. She's gone. But we got to support Representative Doug Lamborn, who is a Colorado Republican who is leading the effort against NPR in the House. And he said, I've been seeking to push Big Bird out of the nest for over a year based on the simple fact that we can no longer afford to spend taxpayer dollars on non-essential government programs. It's time for Big Bird to earn his wings and learn to fly on his own. Good. That's all. So there's another topic that I introduced at the end of the hour that I want to talk about. You can call on NPR if you want, and that's the death penalty. The Illinois governor today abolished the death penalty more than 10 years after the state imposed the moratorium on executions, and he also commuted the sentences of all 15 inmates remaining on Illinois' death row. They will now serve life in prison. I've asked you to call with arguments for and against the death penalty, which is a very important topic, by the way. Portland, Oregon. Anne, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I was phoning in response to your question of what NPR has not aired, and I can't tell you what they haven't aired in the last few years because I was listening to NPR one day when my head was getting ready to explode, and I turned the station, and there you were, and you were saying exactly what I was screaming in my head.
Uh-huh. No, many people from the day I began a radio said that I thought I was alone, I thought I was crazy, but when I heard you speak, I didn't feel alone anymore.
Cathartic. And I believe that what they have not aired would be any objective, critical analysis of anything.
Of anything, very well put. No, Oregon is about as sad as it gets. It was once a great, very conservative state when it was... when it consisted mainly of blue-collar workers in the fishing and forestry industries, mining. But once it was infected by refugees from San Francisco in the late 60s and 70s, they took over Portland and polluted the entire body politic. It's a completely mental breakdown in Oregon.
It's a different place. I'm from California.
I guess I'll be banned in Oregon for this. I won't be able to cross the border from California into Oregon as a result of this statement. We'll soon find out. Let's talk about the death penalty. Coleman in San Antonio is opposed to the death penalty. He's going to have his moment in the sun right now. Coleman, tell us why.
Yes, I'd like to say I'm opposed to it because I don't believe the state should be able to have a monopoly on violence against its people. I think that's a slippery slope. Especially if it turns out that they screw up and they execute somebody innocent, they obviously can't bring them back from the dead.
Well, we've heard the argument about the innocent again, but you should understand that with the new science of DNA evidence, that more or less puts that argument to rest. There are videotape interrogations now, easier access to DNA evidence that have been in place to prevent innocent people from being wrongly executed. So that's one point that I'd like to make, but I'd like to make another. Are you aware of the current case of a man whose son was brutally raped and then killed by a man who was an alleged cannibal who was going to get out of jail, and the father said that if he gets out, he's going to kill him? Have you heard that story?
No, and obviously situations like that are horrible, and those monsters don't deserve the comforts of society. They should be chopping rocks in some penal colony somewhere.
Well, that's a different story, which is maybe they're living a little too well in America's prisons. But the father has said publicly that if they do release this man, which they're going to do, he is going to track him down and kill him. I fear that they're going to arrest the father because we have such a perverted sense of justice in America that even a grieving father whose son was brutally murdered and raped by a psychotic killer can't even say what he'd like to do to him. He didn't actually commit the crime. We have such a perverted justice system that I fear for this man's freedom, to be honest with you. I support the death penalty for cases like this, by the way. I've heard the other side, and I've thought carefully about it because I'm actually a peace-loving man. I understand that we are a society that has moved away from the eye for an eye revenge mentality of the Bible, supposedly. But I'm going to ask you another question. Don't you think it serves as a deterrent? If a man is about to commit a crime that is punishable by death, wouldn't he choose a state where it's not punishable by death, where he's going to live on death row and have rather in the general population for the rest of his life? Wouldn't he choose that state?
Well, you could also argue that somebody who was crazy and was going to commit the crime anyway knew that they were possibly going to get off easy by getting killed as opposed to spending their life doing something extremely tough, like some sort of forced labor, which is what people like that deserve in the first place.
Well, we could change the argument, if you wish, and say, all right, you want to do away with the death penalty, then take everybody on death row in America and deport them to Mexico to serve out their life sentences in a Mexican prison. Would that work for you?
Well, why not? We shouldn't be forced to bear the financial burden of incarcerating these people.
And the cost of death row, keeping someone on death row, is through the roof. I agree with you. I would say that if you're opposed to the death penalty, then you should say, all right, I'll split the baby down the middle with you, so to speak. And we're going to agree that we need much more severe punishments for these monsters. And we're going to deport them to Mexico with permission of the Mexican government. And they're going to serve out the rest of their natural life in a prison in Mexico, which, by the way, doesn't have the death penalty. They're such a civilized nation that they don't need a death penalty. They just wind up with a lot of people beheaded all over the country. See, they don't need a death penalty. All right, so we've had one discussion on the death penalty. How about another one? Tim in Wisconsin, are you for or against the death penalty?
You're going to like me, Michael, because I'm a bitter Christian clinging to my guns. I'm definitely for the death penalty. When these people have murdered someone in such a heinous way, I've had liberal friends that say, it's cruel and unusual punishment. Well, they're victims. Did not get a say on whether or not how they died was cruel and unusual. Their victims were killed. Their victims did not have a choice on whether or not they were going to get life in prison or they're going to be murdered, okay? There was no choice for these innocent people that were murdered. So what?
But the argument from the left and the sympathetic left, they're not all bad people, is that the state shouldn't become what they were. We shouldn't become what the murderer was. We should be better than them. Now, I want to again go to Wakefield, Rhode Island. Rhode Island dad vows revenge if son's killer is released. It's been more than 35 years since 5-year-old Jason Foreman was brutally murdered, steps from his parents' Wakefield, Rhode Island home. And now the man who admitted to killing the boy, then 16-year-old neighbor Michael Woodmansey, is scheduled to get out of prison 12 years early. Foreman's father told WPRO's show he would take matters into his own hands if his son's killer was set free. He said, I do intend, if this man is released anywhere in my vicinity, or if I can find him after the fact, I do intend to kill this man, and I just need that other information so I can kill him as aggressively and as painfully as he killed my son. How do you like that story?
I can't blame the man. It was his son. And, the funny part about it.
Why don't you tell that to the liberal? Ask him about the man who not only would be a danger to society again, but the father said he ate the flesh of my son. He ate his meat off his bones before he cleaned the bone. He is a murderer, a cannibal. That's what he thinks about, and that's what is still on his mind. And I'm sure when he gets out, he's going to do it again. Did you hear this? But the lead prosecutor on the case, so-called Superior Court Associate Justice Susan McGurl, said, we discussed with the Foreman family the defendant's possible release on parole or good time. We did not anticipate, due to the condition of the defendant, that he would be able to earn the maximum good time credit. So there it is. There's an example of what happens when you release a murderer too soon. Now, you know why they're releasing him. Prisoners can earn up to 10 days early release per month for good behavior and another 2 days for prison jobs, no matter what crime they committed. Can you believe this?
I can't believe it, and he will kill again. I can guarantee it. But I can see, if this father does end up killing this guy, I can see they'll prosecute the living crap out of the father because, you know, he's wrong.
They'll prosecute this father even if he doesn't lift a finger. I can guarantee you that our perverted justice system is so warped that they will arrest this father just for saying he would kill this man.
Right, absolutely. That's
how perverted our justice system is in this country. I thank you for the call. It's the Savage Nation. We're talking about the death penalty for and against because the so-called governor of Illinois today abolished capital punishment and empty death row. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We're talking about NPR and why we should defund the almost $500 million. It's a half a billion dollars. It's a lot of money, even for Obama. When you think about it, I mean, even for Obama, that's a big check, you know. I mean, he writes checks like it's his money. Never had it so good. He woke up. There he was on Air Force One. In the beginning, he didn't know how to go up the steps. He looked like, oh, my God, what did I pull off? Remember that for the first month or two? Oh, my God. And then all of a sudden, he's in the role, write the checks. Eliminate NASA, take over this, take over that. Good act. No one stopped him because you got NPR, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN. They're all virtually the same propaganda ministry. They all come out of the same propaganda mold of the ex-Soviet Union. Izvestia, or Pravda. Pravda meant the truth. NPR likes to pose as it's the truth. So there's a movement now to defund them, and it should be defunded. They won't disappear because you got left-wingers in the country with nothing but money that they built from the American people. I'll give you the names, by the way, this week. I'm going to get the names for you. There are a couple of people who made, I think, I forget the number. I'm going to say in the $1 billion range, $2-3 billion. They sold their SNL, their savings and loan chain, just before the crash of the economy. They made billions of dollars on fraudulent mortgages, according to people who studied it. They were deeply enmeshed in the entire scandal. They are the single largest donors to the ACLU. They gave $9 million to the ACLU. Before we talk about their names, which I will get for you, I want to find out how much they've given to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Then we're going to expose them, and then we're going to ask the filmmaker who was here yesterday to go do a little hidden camera on them the next time they go give a little testimonial somewhere in San Francisco, patting themselves on the back for bringing America to its knees. Because it's all about money. You got to understand something. They say that money is the mother's milk of politics, right? But it's all a propaganda war at the end of the day. And whichever side has more money usually wins, whether it's in politics or in propaganda. And it's somewhat the same at the end of the day. And, you know, that is why Obama and his left-wing fanatics wanted to eliminate talk radio. Remember one of the first things they were talking about when they seized power through their methodologies? Back in a couple of years ago, seems so long ago, doesn't it? They were after talk radio because they knew we were one of the last voices to criticize them. We were the last sort of, I don't know, cowboys out there who were free to speak what we actually thought was going on. And some of us actually did our homework and could prove what we were saying was true. You can't have that. Instead, give $1 billion to these little goody-two-shoes people at NPR so they could lie about everything. And if you think that I'm just here as a shill for the Republican Party, you haven't listened to the show long enough to know that. But I'm not going to sit here and try to sell you on me. It's one man, one man's opinion. It's a seasoned opinion. I'm not going to hide my age. I'm proud of it. I'll be 69 years old the end of this month, God willing. You know, in the beginning in radio, I've been in radio, I think this will be 17 years, this March 20th or something like that. People said, oh, don't tell them how old you are. I started when I was 50. This was a late career for me, by the way. Nobody knew how old I was. You say, oh, well, hide it because the younger audience. I don't care about the younger audience. They better go on what I'm saying with my intelligence, and that's the end of it. I really don't care about age and this and that. What, we have to cater to Charlie Sheen's crowd? That's what we have to cater to, the junkies and the sex maniacs out there? Forget about it. This is who I am. I'm not going to be here forever, so you may as well know it. You know, I try to be careful in what I say, honest to God. I welcome back to the Savage Nation. I was just thinking out loud. I'm not a fool. I understand that I agitate some people with the things I say. That's an understatement. And I do walk around with a high degree of caution and a certain degree of fear. I would lie to you if I said otherwise. You got to be crazy not to. You speak the truth in this country, and you got people who hate you, particularly the government. And I worry about it. Believe me, I worry about it. I worry about phone conversations. I worry that my own government has turned on me. I fear that they wouldn't protect me. In fact, I think the opposite is true. I'll be honest with you. I don't feel protected by the government. I did feel protected when Bush was in power, even though I was highly critical of Bush, and even though I defied Bush on the Dubai ports deal, and I think, by the way, I made an enemy of the Bush administration with that. And I believe if we could ever unravel this Gordian knot, and I don't think we can, you will find that it was George Bush's administration that worked in concert with the UK government to ban me in Britain. You'd say, well, it was Obama. It wasn't Obama. It happened during the Bush administration that the actual ban occurred. So it could have been a whole consortium of people under Bush, believe me. So don't assume that, you know, one side is good and one side is bad. It isn't that way at all. A government exists strictly for itself. It doesn't exist for the people. We know that, which is what the whole Tea Party and the entire angst is about in America right now. But I don't have to repeat what you already know to be true. So I want to focus instead on two specifics today. One is the death penalty, because the governor of Illinois outlawed the death penalty and commuted the sentences of all of the murderers on death row, which is astounding that one man has that much power. I think it's disgusting. I think the governor should be impeached for it, but he isn't the first governor to play a dictator. The second story is what topics or subjects or big stories did NPR not cover? And I think these are great topics, by the way. So let's go to Portland. Lawrence, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Mike, I'm against the death penalty because I believe that if you really wanted to punish that person, leave him alive, you know, he has his own punishment to think about it, you know, counting it all, and, you know, he's just going to torture
But you know, Lawrence, you see, you're not a murderer. You're not an evil man. You would be guilty. Your conscience would eat you alive. But I don't think an average, decent person such as yourself can get into the mind of a murderer who's on death row. They take pride in their work. They are considered heroes in prison. They enjoy a celebrity status for being a murderer who was on death row. It's the opposite of what the liberals tell us. So, okay, you see, I'm lucky. I have a kaleidoscopic mind that what I was blessed with, and it could be a curse, by the way. You ask anybody with an advanced mind that has many compartments and many capacities in any sphere of work, and you'll find out that it's a blessing and a curse. But ever since I've been a child, I was able to really think what the other person was thinking, think through things and try to imagine what the other side was thinking until you say you can go crazy from it. How can you manage all of that and still have an opinion of your own? Well, through a very careful analysis of my own motivations and also what I think is right and wrong. And again, to explain myself, I guess I'm explaining myself a little too much once in a while. I guess I have to do it. Through long decades of watching things happen. So last night I saw a movie, by the way, called on television. I guess I watched too much television, I'll admit it. And a lot of my imagination is based upon, I would suppose, from too much television. I admit it. So last night I watched military history, but it was enough already. I couldn't take it. Famous tank battles in World War II. It's unbelievable, the heroism of America's troops. But then I moved to a movie called Felony. I forget the actor's name, but it's about a guy, middle-class white guy, who is at home with his wife and daughter. And some gangbangers come around to his property and threaten them, and he kills them with a bat. Oh, it's called Felon. Kills them with a bat. And he's put into prison for defending his wife and children. And there's a sadistic prison guard in the SHU. And it's pretty amazing. A family man convicted of killing an intruder must cope with life afterward in the violent penal system. Pretty well done, actually. Stephen Dorff, Marisol Nichols, and Vincent Miller. I don't know who they are, but... Stephen Dorff is in it. He plays a pretty good line. And so the family man is living the American dream with his girlfriend, Laura, and their son, Michael. Nice house. And their dream becomes a nightmare when Wade unintentionally kills a burglar that had broken into the house in the middle of the night on his lawn. So he's sent to trial and accepts a deal proposed by the prosecutor, being sentenced to 3 years in prison. And during the transportation, there's an incident in the bus, and Wade is framed and sent to the maximum security wing under the command of the corrupt Lieutenant Jackson. His cellmate, John Smith, was sentenced to life, revenging the death of his family. And he befriends Wade and gives helpful advice on what to do in prison to survive. But some of the scenes of the men thrown into an exercise yard for that 1 hour a day together, where he has to fight virtually every day for his life. Either you beat the other guy almost to a pulp or you get beaten to a pulp. I don't know how much of that really goes on. But it leads you to believe that it leads you to come to the conclusion that, A, there are too many people in prison who don't belong there, which we know is true. I think the last number I read was we had over 2 million people in prison in America. The largest per capita number of people in prison proportionate to the population of the entire world are in the United States of America. It's an industry unto itself. It's worthy of 3 weeks of an investigation as to why so many people are incarcerated. It would lead you to conclude we have to stop the incarceration of people for petty crimes and for marijuana use. I am totally opposed to marijuana use, but I feel if somebody wants to poison their brain and make themselves into a bigger dope than they already are, let them go do it. I feel the same way about drugs, by the way. If they want to poison themselves, if they want to kill themselves, they want to become many people in prison for drug usage. Now, you could turn it around. Asia has a pretty strong attitude towards drugs. It's a Muslim nation. I remember going there, I don't know, 15 years ago. I don't know if it's still true. And on the way in from the airport of Kuala Lumpur, it says in huge billboards, using drugs in Malaysia is punishable by death. You know what? Or importing drugs. I mean, maybe if we put up a few billboards like that in every city in America, we might have a more of a result, you know, than putting people in prison for smoking dope. But having said that, the whole issue of being a felon and being put in prison is an amazing story. But that has almost nothing to do with the topic at hand, does it? I mean, I just got a little off the track. That's what talk radio is. I'm not a machine. I'm a human being. And when you do it for 3 hours a day, you know, you have to let your mind roam and you have to go with your thoughts, as I would with individuals if I were having a conversation. In that, a conversation's purpose is to converse, to share verse, and to come to some conclusions, if you wish, or just entertain yourself. But these are very serious topics. I believe we need to defund NPR and let corporations fund them and the communists in our midst. And then I believe that $500 million that Obama wants to write them a check, it's $460, by the way, I'm rounding it off, is a lot of money that can be saved by cutting it right out of the federal budget. And then the issue of the death penalty is a big topic. So we have both of them on the table right now if you'd like to talk about it. Albany, New York. Robert, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hello. I'm against the death penalty because I don't think it is a deterrent against murder. I think murderers are in a different mind when they're murdering, and they're not thinking about the law. They're not thinking about the consequences.
Well, I think that that's a subjective decision, opinion on your part. You don't think it prevents crime.
Well, no.
Any hard evidence to say it does not prevent crime?
Well, yeah. When you look at when certain states started to re-legalize it after the Supreme Court decision, their murder rates stayed about where the other states were and fluctuated with the economy and everything else. It wasn't all of a sudden the murder rate stopped in those states because people were afraid of this.
All right, that's a rational argument. Then how do you justify releasing someone from prison who raped a young boy and ate him after he was dead? Don't you think the man is likely to do it again?
I don't think he should get parole ever, but I don't think he needs to be killed. I think he's just rotten.
Why shouldn't he be snuffed? Why? Why should he have life? Why should he enjoy the comforts of a prison cell and the care of a prison system that goes out of its way because of lawsuits to treat them in many ways better than our senior citizens are treated in some of our poorer communities? They have better medical care, better dental care, better legal care than most of our poor citizens. I don't think that's a rational way to spend money.
It's more expensive to hire all the lawyers, to file for all the appeals over and over. It ends up costing less to...
Well, now you're starting to agree with me. Who pays those lawyers? Who pays all these do-gooders who will appeal a case for 25 years for a man who obviously did the crime? Who pays their bills?
What are you going to do, eliminate the appeal process?
Well, it's a good question. Let's go back to the 1950s. There was one appeal permitted, and it was swift justice. People who committed murders who were found guilty were given one or two appeals and usually executed within 3 years. There was a much lower murder rate then. Do you know that?
No, that's true. Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, now... It was
so why don't we just have fewer appeals and quicker executions? I don't understand why that's not a rational alternative. Fewer appeals, go back to the 50s, get rid of these psychotic lawyers who make a career of it. Do you know that there are lawyers who have spent their entire career defending one murderer on death row? I know it from San Quentin here in California. But you made a very good point. I don't think it's as convincing a point as you would have liked in that regard. But if you'd like to continue to talk about it, we can do so for and against the death penalty. I don't know why people are opposed to it. Where does this sympathy for murderers come from? I don't get it. I've heard all the arguments. It's barbaric. It violates the cruel and unusual clause in the Bill of Rights, which is nonsense. It says it sends the wrong message, because why kill people who kill people to show killing is wrong? That's, again, a false canard. Then they say life in prison is a worse punishment and a more effective deterrent. I believe that's a complete falsehood. The possibility exists that innocent men and women may be put to death. That is true to a very small percentage today. And then another argument against the death penalty is that it creates sympathy for the monstrous perpetrators of the crimes. Not in my heart it doesn't. Now, how about arguments for the death penalty? Prisoner parole or escapes can give criminals another chance to kill. Absolutely true. It provides a deterrent for prisoners already serving a life sentence, right? In other words, let's say there's a prisoner serving a life sentence, and he's in prison. He could murder in that prison. He could murder a prison guard, couldn't he? He'd be reluctant to murder a prison guard if he knew he could get the death penalty, wouldn't he? He could even murder another prisoner who may not be that violent if he knew he couldn't get the death penalty. Figure, I mean, anyway, may as well have some fun. I'm a murderer, so let's kill the guy in here for tax evasion. Let me just cut his throat for fun. I would say it's a good deterrent for him to know that there's a death penalty. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, Wisconsin news, collective bargaining was just eliminated. Republicans in the Wisconsin Senate just voted to strip nearly all collective bargaining rights, bring a way to bypass the chamber's missing Democrats. As you know, the cowardly demon cats fled to Illinois 3 weeks ago and haven't come back. And they prevented the chamber from having enough members to consider Governor Scott Walker's so-called budget repair bill. That's to repair a $137 million budget shortfall. Now, while the Senate required a quorum to take up any measure, they found a way around it. And they passed the bill. So the governor seems to have won for the moment. Other big news, as you know, NPR CEO was thrown out because of the video that exposed her friends for the bias they have. We've been talking about the biases of NPR, and we've been talking primarily about the topics that they have not covered presently and in the past to show that they're nothing but frankly, a left-wing propaganda arm of the entire left-wing, the worldwide left-wing, not just America. They are really part of the Citizens of the World Brigade, and they're proud of it. They're proud of not being American. They consider themselves to be superior for not loving America, for embracing the New World Order. And for that reason, and for the fact that we don't have the $500 million to toss into the hands of these candy men, I think that we should defund NPR and let the corporations continue to fund them, and the left-wing fanatics who have stolen their hundreds of millions of dollars from the American people through savings and loans and other or corporations that they built and basically ripped off America with. So if you want to talk about these topics, we got a couple of minutes left in this hour. Ray in Sacramento, go ahead, please.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Well, I think we need to stop treating the criminals like victims. You know, it's a decision they make. It's, if you look at a fire and you know that you reach your hand in, you're going to get burned, yet you choose to reach your hand in anyway, you deserve to get burned. They know the rules. Mm-hmm. They know it's not right, but they choose to do it. It's not...
Yeah. You know, I hear you. Well, you know, our president isn't worried about issues of state. He's having another party tonight. He's going to watch the Bulls and Bobcats game at a viewing party at the White House in order to enjoy himself again. How do you feel about that? Golfing on Sunday, party on Monday, Tuesday, basketball night, Wednesday. How do you feel about a president who is absolutely so silly?
Well, I'm glad to see he's involved in our current affairs and paying real close attention to what's going on. You know, being a voice for the
and public. Because on Friday, the White House will honor the Blackhawks for their 09-10 Stanley Cup victory. So he's got a couple of big parties this week. You know, and it's a stressful job. And he's got a party on. I mean, he and Charlie Sheen, you know, boys just want to have fun. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it would just be nice just at least once to know that the voice of the public is actually foremost on somebody's mind up in the White House. Apparently,
what do you think would happen if a Republican president was golfing on Sunday and partying several times a week with games and teams in the White House? What would he be called by NPR? Do you think NPR would do a story on it? President Bush golfed on Sunday in the midst of Libya's burning, and on Wednesday he hosted a basketball team in the White House, and on Friday he hosted another sports party. Nina, is this something that's unusual in the White House? Well, no, honey, not really. This is something that all Republicans do. But as you well know, when we get a real progressive candidate in the White House, this kind of misuse of the public office will come to an end. Yeah, right. Your skirts are dirty. All of you, your skirts are dirty, and it's time to take you all to the laundry. That's what I want to say about NPR. Your skirts are dirty, and it's time you were taken to the laundry. Write that down. Put that down on YouTube. Savage said today about NPR, their skirts are dirty and it's time we take them to the laundry. And he played the NPR analyst Daisy Hernandez expressing her brown relief that the Arizona shooter wasn't Latino but instead a gringo. Listen to this if you think I'm making it up.
I wasn't the only person on Saturday who rushed to her Android when news came of the Tucson shooting. I wasn't looking, however, to read about what had happened. What I wanted to know was the killer's surname. My eye scanned the mobile papers. I held my breath. Finally, I saw it. Jared Loughner. Not a Ramirez, Gonzalez, or Garcia. It's safe to say there was a collective sigh of brown relief when the Tucson killer turned out to be a gringo.
Gringo, just the word itself makes me angry. It's a derogatory term by it, the way. It's the same kind of derogatory term as Howley in Hawaii. When non-white people refer to Europeans, they say behind their back, he's a Howley. And, of course, some of the dumb liberals smile when it's applied to them. They think it's a term of endearment if they only knew what it actually meant. Gringo, my friends, is not a term that is not derogatory. Or to put it another way, they're putting you down. But that's NPR. They're not biased. Just ask Nina Totenberg and ask the other wonderful specimens of objectivity at NPR why they would permit someone on the air to call white people gringos and to celebrate that the murderer was not a Latino without a note about the victims of the murderer, and then you'll find out why we need to defund NPR. But then again, the bigger issue is not Daisy at NPR. It's the doozy in the White House. The man doesn't seem to work. Party boy Obama. The fact of the matter is we've never had a president as disconnected from reality as Barack Hussein Obama. If he keeps this up, I think Charlie Sheen would be able to run against him and beat him in 2012. Because America would be used to the party animal in the White House. Again, the Bulls, that's what he's going to do. He's going to watch a basketball game tonight, and on Friday he's going to host teams over there? You're not offended by this?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We'll be right back. Notes for the Savage Nation. The big news today, well, there's lots of big news. The U.S. won't lift a finger to stop the bloodshed in Libya. Secretary of Hate, Secretary Clinton, says the U.S. cannot lead a no-fly zone. It needs international backing, so therefore we can do nothing. We also learned that the ATF itself has shipped machine guns to Mexico, leading to murders all over Mexico and the U.S. Thank you, Janet Napolitano. And, of course, the biggest story on an emotional level is the National Propaganda Radio, NPR, has dumped their CEO over the video scandal. We had this on our show yesterday, as you well know. The video shows various top executives calling the Tea Party racist, calling the Republicans names, attacking Israel, attacking Jews. Now, Vivian Schiller was never qualified for this job. She should be running a Carvel ice cream stand in Dubuque. But she was finally thrown out as the result of James O'Keefe, who I had on the show yesterday. Thanks to O'Keefe and those who support him in the Savage Nation and elsewhere, National Propaganda Radio has gone from the triumph of the will to the downfall of the shill. Now, today I'm going to play for you some of the complete insanity that NPR has been responsible for recently and that you as an American taxpayer have had to pay for. Do you think Congress will finally have the guts to completely defund NPR and put them into the private sector? I want you to listen to my last interview with Donald Trump, and I want you to pay particular attention to where I ask him about how many jobs he's created. I don't think anyone's asked him that question before. If job creation is the key to winning field, you see, not all rich people are the same. Some make it like Soros through speculation. Others actually build things like Trump. Now, what stories has NPR not covered that you think are important? Let me repeat that. Which stories has NPR not covered? They claim that they're very neutral. We know that that's a lie. They're nothing but a left-wing flack organization. Here are some of the topics that NPR refuses to cover. The Acorn scandal, the flood of illegal aliens crossing the border, death panels that exist in Obamacare, the Soros connections to the revolutions in the Middle East, the radical Islamic murder of U.S. troops in Germany last week, Nancy Pelosi abusing the Air Force, using it as a personal taxi service for her and her family, the trail of leftist cowardice that led to the Fort Hood shootings, Louis Farrakhan calling Jews names, Obama constantly partying at the White House like a teenager whose parents are gone, and finally but not last, Michael Savage being banned from entering Britain. None of these stories have been covered by NPR. Disfund them all. These are some of the topics we'll be talking about today in this hour on the Savage Nation. I don't think you're really interested in this, really. I mean, I could play stuff that you'd be interested in. I don't think people are interested in this dry stuff, to be honest with you. I know you're not. I knew that. I have a very good instinct about it. If you woke up tomorrow and read that Obama said Israel should disappear from the planet, you'd probably go about brushing your teeth and seeing who you can contact on Twitter. Or if he said we're giving Taiwan to China, you'd probably brush your teeth and go on to Twitter and see who you can go out to dinner with tonight or who you can hook up with. You know, it's not, I got to be honest with you. I know that I'm from another generation, and maybe I care too much about certain things. I'm not going to apologize for it, but I was discussing this last night with someone, and I said, don't you know that the world that we grew up in is no longer here? We grew up in a different world than the world that we're living in today. It's a different universe. Obama's not from our world. Obama's from a much more, shall I say, nihilistic, atheistic world, where there's no loyalty to any nation, no loyalty to the concept of nationhood. In fact, no loyalty to the concept of decency, in my opinion. And I said many of the things we grew up on no longer exist. Duty, loyalty, honor to your own family, to yourself, starting with yourself. Do you have a duty to yourself? Do you have honor to yourself? Do you have a loyalty to yourself? How about your family? How about duty, honor, and loyalty to something bigger than yourself, something beyond the family? Very little of this goes beyond anyone who's younger than 50, in my estimation. Some have it, but most don't. I think most people are living on their id. They're running on pure id fumes right now. And I don't think that the world that I live in is really the world that the general American public truthfully shares in. And I'm not apologizing for it, nor am I trying to marginalize myself. And I, in a way, maybe I'm trying to explain why I care about these issues that I care about. And so having said that, I still have millions of listeners because they are either from my generation or they're a little younger than me or they think the way I do or they'd like to know how I think and try to figure out who's right, me or the atheistic, nihilistic people who follow people like Obama, etc. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I thought it was a very interesting interview for a number of reasons, and I'll tell you the main reason is I'm a pretty straightforward guy. I didn't write the questions up, and he didn't pause. His answers were straight out. Now, I want you to compare the way he answered some of these questions as opposed to one of the stiffs. Let's add a stiff on like Romney or Polenti. You know what you'd get. You'd get a stiff, rigid, a teleprompter answer. I'm tired of it. That's why I don't have any guests. This show is going to be the big... This show's booming. I mean, first of all, the ratings are up, which is interesting year to year, while many other shows are down. I know why. But I think it's going to be my biggest year ever. The thing keeping me going now is I got to get through the election of 2012. I've got to make sure Obama loses. That's number one. If you say, what's my professional goal? Anybody but Obama. Anybody but Obama. That's number one. I have a novel coming out in August or September from St. Martin's Press. I'm working around the clock on it. Okay? It's amazing. The story is so good that when I reread it and reread it and reread it, I kind of get chills sometimes. And I'm not going to tell you any more about it. It's a political thriller loosely based on someone being banned in England and being screwed by his own government. And yes, Teddy is not in it. There's a character named Eddie who's an 11-pound gray poodle. Other than that, there's nothing autobiographical in the book whatsoever. But I want to see it on the big screen. I don't know who's going to play Teddy yet in the book. I think I may be Teddy's agent. I actually want to see my dog in the movie, the movie version of the. You know what it's called, by the way? Abuse of Power. Great title! So if you want to do politics, we can do it, you know. You want to talk general, whatever. You see any good movies lately? I saw a good movie. I'm getting blind from watching TV at night. I'll tell you the truth. It's a great relaxation for me. You know what's the most underestimated health promoter in the world? I'll tell you, television, in a certain way. And you say, come on, Mike, you must be kidding. No, I don't mean cable news. I'm telling you that I found a long time ago, you know, I'm going back to like the 70s when they were bumper stickers, and I found one once on a refrigerator somewhere, I don't know where. It said, when in doubt, get horizontal. You know those cute sayings, right? I swear it works for me every time. If I get stressed out, I go in a dark room, usually my bedroom. I lock the door, load the guns, release the dogs around the property, and I watch a movie. Or I lay in the dark, a dark room for 20 minutes. It's the most restful thing I could do is lie in a dark room. I learned this a long time ago. It's cut out all input into your brain. You know your brain uses up about 20% of the blood sugar energy in your body at any one time? You didn't know that much, you know, energy requires to think. So anyway, I don't want to talk about health, you know what I'm saying? What's the point? You look at Nat Geo, what's the point of living altogether? That's why I don't believe in it. I say, how could you, as a trained scientist with a PhD from the University of California, how could you say you don't believe in Nat Geo's view of the world? 29 million years ago, 46 million years ago, 180 million years ago, there was nothing but muck. And out of the muck, there crawled a distinctly ugly, smelly little creature that had no head, nothing but a tail that slithered out. And the next thing you knew, here we are. I'll tell you why I don't believe that's true. Now, I've studied evolution. Here we go again. This is as good as Ron Paul callers or Bertha calls, but I don't want to deal with this. Because I do lay awake at night and say, what's the point of struggling if in the eons of history, millions of years, why should I motivate myself anymore? I've written all these books. I've achieved all these things. I've climbed all these mountains. What am I doing this for? What am I trying to prove? Who cares what I do anyway? And so you go back to all this vanity, right? I think it's Ecclesiastes wrote, all his vanity. I knew him personally. He wasn't a bad guy. He could make a good corned beef sandwich. At the same time, he had philosophy that wasn't bad as well. He'd make you a sandwich and tell you all his vanity. Old Ecclesiastes ran a great deli in old Palestine. But the point I'm making is there can be evolution as a concept coexisting with the creation of man and all of the animals on the earth by God. I had this discussion once with a religious scholar on this show who really floored me with his answer. He was extremely religious. And he said, Michael, it says in the Bible, and God created the world in 7 days. How could you believe that, people say, unless you were a child or a Republican? I mean, that's the joke that goes around in, you know, snotty liberal circles where all their children wind up drug addicts, okay, or behaving like Charlie Sheen. They wonder why. You raise a child without any belief. You know what the child's going to wind up doing? They're going to believe in drugs. They're going to believe in alcohol. They're going to believe in rampant sexuality. Because if you don't believe in anything, if you don't believe there are any consequences or any meaning to your life, what do you think a child's going to do? A child must be given a religious upbringing, a belief in something. I don't say become a fanatic, okay? That's how I see it. So anyway, so he said to me that our concept of time is different than God's sense of time. And so when God said, and the world was created in 7 days, a day to God could have been 10 million years. A day to God could have been a million years. So it could mean, and God created the world in 7 million years. Or God created the world in 70 million years. And I said, you know what? Even though the numbers don't really work or add up, I'll take it. Since it's all a mystery, listen to how my logical mind works. My highly developed, super evolved mind, look how it works. Even though that answer is incomplete, and even though that answer is not intellectually perfect, I'll take it. How do you like that? I don't go for the Nat Geo we started from a worm crawling in the ground. I'm sorry. May you speak for yourself, Johnson. If you think you descended from a worm, good luck to you. Now I know why you behave that way. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I'm just having a good time today. I told you something's wrong. I think I know what it is. Instead of eating bread for breakfast, I had broccoli. I know you say, well, how'd you get there? And I tried something new. I said, you know, you wrote all these books on nutrition, right? Well, go back to eating living foods and whole foods. I mean, they're not crazy. You wrote books about this years ago. You know, when I started to analyze virtually everything I eat is dead. Everything I eat is dead. Everything I eat is like emaciated and dead and disgusting. The chicken is like a gray thing in a package before I cook it. It's been there. My relatives, I was a little boy in the Catskill Mountains. They go to a live poultry market, which you still see in Chinatown, by the way. One of the reasons I love walking through the Chinatown of San Francisco is that many of the Chinese remind me of my relatives when I was younger. You know, yelling at each other in a butcher market. No, I don't want that chicken. Yo, keep that chicken. I want that chicken. I saw the same thing going on when I was a kid. The women wouldn't pick the shrimpy little chicken that was depressed in the back complaining of allergies. They wanted that chicken that strutted and ran away from the butcher with the axe. That's the chicken they wanted. It's terrible. And you'd see these women knock the chicken's head off and it would run without a head with the blood spurting out. It was horrible as a child to watch that. As a city boy, I got to tell you, the women didn't blink. It didn't mean nothing to them. And then they ripped the feathers out and you take it home. Now, that was a live chicken. I guarantee you didn't eat antibiotics either. They didn't even know what an antibiotic was in those days. So I realized that I actually grew up on whole foods in a strange way. And now, of course, virtually everything I eat is this, that, packaged. So no wonder we feel denatured and we don't have much energy. So although I tend to eat a lot of organic food as often as possible at home anyway, all my fruit's organic, all my vegetables are organic, blah, blah, blah. Hippie chickens I get with the degrees. No this, no that. But they're still old in the package, right? So I decided, you know what? Bread slows you down. You love bread. My mother loved bread. She lived to 88. Don't give me this no-carb business. Stop being a fool. Okay? You know, bread is the staple of life. You gotta be realistic here. Stop with the idiocy. I see people eating diets. You can't believe it. No wonder they look the way they do, and they need medication. But I decided to eat a little less bread, so I substituted steamed broccoli for breakfast. I feel so good, I'm frightened. I feel like Buddy Hackett when he went in the Army, I told you. I don't understand it. I don't have a headache. I don't have a sinus problem. I feel optimistic. This is bad. This is so unusual for me. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. On to other topics. Look at this on michaelsavage.com. Obamacare is so corrupt. It makes the word Banana Republic sound respectable as to what this man has turned our country into. In other words, if you have enough money or influence, you can buy your way out of Obamacare. This guy, if I say he's a clown, he gives clowns a good name. I mean, this is beyond the clown. The man is running the country as though it's a private business, and you can buy and sell your way in or out of laws. What is this all about, people are saying? The American people fundamentally fired Obama in November. They fired him. They said no to him. They threw out Nancy Pelosi. Why did they throw Pelosi out? Why did they throw out almost 100 congressmen and governors? Why? Because of Obama. So what, he stays there now another 2 years with a wrecking ball, taking apart one great piece of legislation after another, putting in one corrupt criminal law after another? What kind of system is this? You know, crimes and misdemeanors? Well, he hasn't committed a crime so far as I know. He hasn't committed a misdemeanor unless you consider taking the Constitution apart, paragraph by paragraph, a crime or a misdemeanor. This is crazy. And I'd rather hear this talked about rather than the birthing. I'd rather talk about the man's corruption, and I'd rather hear talk about Obama's lack of connection to reality than talk about where he was born, frankly. And that's all I want to say about that this time. By the way, how's the ganja from Kenya?
Savage.
You know, Peter King's investigation is coming up into radical Islam. Joining us now is Rabbi Aryeh Spiro, who wrote a recent article about this very topic. Rabbi Spiro, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you for having me on your show today.
What's your impression of these investigations of radical Islam?
Michael, in my article, I start with the following question, and I think this is very pivotal. And it is, how many more Americans must be threatened and murdered by Muslims yelling Allah Akbar before the political establishment acknowledges there is a profound threat to Americans coming from within the Muslim community that must be investigated? I've been distressed by the fact that except for Peter King and maybe one or two others, we've not heard from our Congress, the senators, the congressmen, any type of acknowledgement that there is this great threat. And I wonder, where's the tipping point? How many more Americans are going to have to be killed in the name of Allah Akbar before our politicians finally wake up and say, listen, it's time we do what we have to do to protect the American people? And when people ask me, well, how would I like, as a Jew, if members of our community were being investigated? And the answer is very simple. I can tell you that if from the Jewish community, we had hundreds and thousands planning attacks against fellow Americans and doing these attacks in the name of Judaism, every Jew that I know and every Jewish organization would be out there immediately outing these people and trying to rid our community of these imposters of the faith. We'd be helping law enforcement. We'd be firing any teachers in our schools and synagogues who preach terrorism against fellow Americans or spoke of replacing our Constitution. That's what would happen in the Jewish community. And I expect the same thing from the Muslim community as a way to help their neighbors here in America be protected from what's happening from certain segments within their community.
Well, sure, okay.
And every time something happens, any attack, if it's Fort Hood, if it's in Seattle, if it's in Germany, if it's in New Jersey, if it's in Texas, North Carolina, Christmas Day bomber, we hear from the president and we hear from CARE, which is a Muslim organization, and all the people on the left, that this has nothing to do with Islam, but that's a very, very dangerous procedure. Because if it has nothing to do with Islam, and that's what we're telling the Islamic community, then they're never going to do the introspection and the soul-searching that they should do as a community to finally rid themselves of these radicals. And they're never going to acquiesce to any type of public pressure to help law enforcement find these radicals and to stop some of these imams from preaching what they're preaching. They're never going to do that if we keep telling them, don't worry, it has nothing to do with Islam. So I think this excuse all the time that what's done in the name of Islam has nothing to do with Islam is just perpetuating the danger.
The left wing is screaming that this is an attack on religion and freedom of religion and Islam itself. Do you believe that?
Well, it's not just an attack on Islam. What Peter King is doing is he's not investigating the entire Muslim community. He's investigating and trying to find out regarding the radicals in the community and also trying to find out why the leaders of the community have not been more forthcoming in helping law enforcement. Now, those people that are doing these attacks are doing so in the name of Islam. And therefore, it's incumbent upon the community from whence they come, the Muslim community, to try to root this out. He's not singling out this community because he has any malevolence towards them, but this is the community from whence the attacks against Americans are happening. It happened in Fort Hood, and it happened in Seattle, and there were planned attacks in Riverdale, New York, and there were other individuals that were killed by Muslims, all in the name of Islam. And that's what makes this different. You know, there have always been communities where there are individuals in that particular community that are involved in crime, but they're not doing it in the name of that community.
Mm-hmm.
What makes this different, and it's a first time in American history, is these people that are doing these acts of terror are doing so in the name of an ideology that is associated with a particular community. And so therefore, they're not simply criminals, like people that were in the mafia. They're not just simply criminals. They're agenda-driven. They're ideologically driven, and that's what makes them terrorists and so dangerous. And as a matter of fact, the Islamic community is in a better position to try to find out and to try to stop this than other communities have been, because in other situations, as I mentioned, if there was a mafia, the people were not doing that in the name of the Italian ideology or the Italian version of some type of code, religious code. These people that are doing it from the Muslim community are doing it specifically based on the understanding that they have of Muslim ideology. So it's incumbent upon the Islamic community to say to them, no, this is not the proper Muslim ideology. You're not representing Islam the way it should be. And we're going to make sure that you don't defame Islam, and we're going to find you, and we're going to notify the authorities. So he's not going after them because he doesn't like Muslims. He's going after that community from whence these people are coming and doing so in the name of that community.
Why is the left so reluctant to speak out about radical Islam?
Well, there are many reasons. Number one, many in Congress and certainly the media, they're left-wing people, and they don't want to acknowledge that there is a problem coming out of the Islamic community, because if there is, then that means that the conservative people are correct in this whole issue that's facing us, be it the war on terror, be it Islamic extremism. And so they don't want to ever allow a conservative position or a conservative politician to be labeled as correct. And so what they're doing is they're going to deny the reality of this Islamic extremism, because if it does exist, then that means we have to do many things differently than how the left wants the country to be run. That's number one. Number two, the mantra of the left is political correctness, which means that anybody who claims to be from a minority is somehow automatically noble, and those that are guilty are only those from the majority. And at this point, the Islamic community is a minority in America, and so political correctness demands that you must always say that, no, any grievance that the minority does, any minority group grievance or claim of victimhood, that's absolutely correct, because that's what liberalism is based on. So they can't admit to this problem. And if they do ever acknowledge that there is some type of problem, they have to do what liberals always do, which is to say that the problem really rests with the majority, the white European Christian majority, because they caused it. Somehow it's what they do that causes these folks to act the way that they, the devastating way that they do.
Hmm.
And then I think there's a third thing, which is, might be a little shocking to some of the listeners, but the left really wants to turn upside down the whole historic America that we've known. They view the historic America as the establishment. The left wants to turn this establishment upside down. They want to have power rest in their hands. And so they find that they ally themselves. They partner up with people who come and basically say that America is at fault. And this is what the left has historically done. They've taken up the cause of anyone who blames America. And so you have many of these people in groups like CARE that are always blaming America, and many of the Islamists are blaming America. So it's a temporary convenience. It's very expedient for the left, because what they want to do is to topple the American society as we know it. And so they partner up with another group that hates America, which are the Islamists.
Where do you think it goes from here?
Well, first of all, we've got to support Congressman King, because at this point, he's the only elected official that's speaking about this issue honestly, in real language, language that the American people can understand. And he's telling the American people that there is a problem within the Muslim community that must be addressed, not simply by us, but the Muslim community itself. And I think the hearings are important, because now for the first time, people are speaking about this openly. No, not with any malevolence, and not with any type of bigotry. But, you know, people have a right to be protected, and there's nothing more important than a government protecting its people, and there's nothing more important than people themselves demanding that they be protected. And up until now, we've heard about the sensitivity of the Muslim community and the honor that they require, but there's something more important than that, and that is protecting innocent life.
Exactly.
And as I mentioned, at Fort Hood, innocent Americans were gunned down in the name of Islam by a man saying Allah Akbar. And in the name of sensitivity, what we did was, although many of the superiors of this Nidal Hassan knew that he was a dangerous man and he was espousing dangerous ideologies and almost telegraphing to us what he had planned to do, he wasn't stopped, because everybody wanted to be sensitive to this particular person because he was a Muslim. And so they just let it ride. But because of this need to be sensitive, American people died. In a sense, those in the army who were in charge of him, they chose Islamic sensitivity, quote-unquote, over American life. And that cannot continue.
Oh, I agree.
And I think these hearings will highlight this. You know, there was, back a few years ago, in Seattle, Washington, a Muslim who said he was angry. He went to the Jewish Federation of Seattle, and he started shooting people. One woman was killed, five others were injured. Again, this was in the name of Islam. And these things, I think, will be made more public throughout the hearings of this committee. And hopefully the American people will then wake up and realize that what's at stake is their safety, and at sometimes even their life. So I think the hearings will do a good job of informing the public.
Where can we read more?
Well, my article was in the American Thinker, but I do have a website called Caucus for America, www.caucusforamerica.com, and there I have an archive of all of my articles, many of which have dealt with this threat coming from the Muslim community and the threat to America of the creeping Islamization.
Rabbi Spiro, thanks again for being on the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Many of you don't know my background. Many of you don't know anything about my background. I understand very well the liberal mind. I was never truly a liberal. I was always an independent-minded person and always marched to my own beat. But I certainly traveled in liberal circles for a long enough period of time to pick up the quasi, we are all, you know, we are all one together, nonsense and rubbish of the 60s. I heard it all. I know all about the pseudo-Buddhistic mentality that permeates the radical left in this country. This stems from a delusion, by the way. And the fact is that I have read I and Thou. I've written papers on I and Thou when I was young, and I understand what I and Thou means. And I don't believe, and I'm going now on to the literary intellectual side for a minute, if you don't mind, because I'm not Sean Hannity. The fact of the matter is, I know how the liberal thinks. The liberal thinks that I, Thou has really eliminated all barriers between the murderer and the saint, the prostitute and the son, mother and child, cheater and cheated, Semite and anti, chaser and chaste, vulgar and subtle, even the concept of opposites. They believe that we are all reflections of one another. We are all reflections of one another. So therefore, if we're all reflections of one another, thinks the drug-addicted lawyer, why then he's not really guilty. He's a human being. And if we have to face our enemy, he's not really our enemy. He is us. We drove him to it. We're all one world community. We are all one. Didn't the Beatles tell us we are all one? Isn't that the message of all religions? Aren't we all one? Isn't he simply following his own star to defend his religion of Islam against the perpetrators of such violence against Muslims over so many years and so forth? Believe me, I know their thinking, because I was once a child myself. But I outgrew my childishness. They didn't. Now they're running the country. What I just read to you, incidentally, is very important. What I read to you is something unique to radio, where I said that the liberal says that all barriers between mankind have been eliminated, between the murderer and the saint, the prostitute and the son, mother and child, cheater and cheated, Semite and anti, chaser and chaste, vulgar and subtle, even the concept of opposites. Now, where did I get those words from? Who did I steal them from? I stole them from myself in my own journal from 1982. I have a real treat for you coming up over the next few weeks. I had salted away all my journals from when I was living almost a monastic intellectual life, writing in journals before I went into radio many, many years ago. They were away in a storage bin. This is So Lin Yutang. My assistant just went to this bin and pulled them out, and all these journals just fell in my hands minutes ago. I have one of them. It smells of the same mothballs that were around my plant specimens that I got a few weeks ago out of the same bin. And I want to read you something from the beginning of my journal, which I call The Great American Journal. It begins January 13th, 1981, in a North Beach bar. But the title of the journal was The Great American Journal. And I quote Emerson, where I say, "Novels will give way by and by to diaries or autobiographies, captivating books, if only a man knew how to choose among his experiences that which is really his experience and how to record truth truly." Emerson. And then I wrote next to it in my own words, right at the beginning of the book, in the preface, "Facades create illusions. All entrances are facades. All exits, illusions," July 2nd, 1982. I realize this is a little, you know, too literary kind of stuff for a radio talk show in AM where you're used to, you know, high school dropouts who pretend to be Republican geniuses. But the fact is that's who I am, and you're going to listen to it because I'm telling you it relates to what we're talking about. How else do you explain Obama and Holder twisting reality to such an extent that they have sympathy for the devil? That's because they're products of this quasi-hippie, new-agey thinking, if you want to call it that, and they never outgrew it. They've been living in this insular world of left-wing-ism where they start to think it's the truth. And our enemies are taking advantage of this because they know it's not. The enemy certainly doesn't think that way. The enemy, the Muslim fanatic, doesn't think you are he and he is you and we should all live together in harmony. No, he wants to kill you or convert you. That's what the war in Afghanistan is really about, I suppose. That's what the bombings in India were about. They didn't want to live amongst their Hindu brethren. That's what the bombings in the London subways were about. They wanted to kill the infidels in London, the country that let them in, and convert them to Sharia law. That's what the bombings in Spain were about. They wanted to retake Andalusia, you stupid idiots, you! So now we have these wobblies in office. Left-wingers, soft-minded, no depth, way out of their league. They're playing in the big leagues, and they're playing like cafe communists.
Savage.